Welcome to the Bioelectronics Podcast by Neurocore. I'm your host, Rick Rowan, and this is where we can hear about how bioelectronics is changing healthcare and providing benefits to both patients and healthcare systems worldwide. Welcome to this episode of the Bioelectronics Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Rowan. With me today is my regular co-host, Dr. James Somaru, and Neurocore Bioelectronics Chief Technical Officer, Simon Hughes. Hello, both.
How you doing?
Hi, Rick.
Simon, technology and medicine, or technology and healthcare, who would have thought? It's a really topical area at the moment. Just for our listeners, could you give us a little bit of background to yourself, your experience and what you do at Neurocore?
Yeah, sure, Rick. So I've been in the IT industry for some 25 plus years, very much a technically focused person. So I've got a lot of experience writing software and then kind of going through the typical development career path, going through developer, senior developer, architect, through to senior architect, working for some very FTSE 100 sized organizations. And about a couple of years ago, I kind of moved on to the fractional CTO role, which I do today. So I work as a CTO across a number of companies, one of which is Neurocore.
Mm-hmm. I think you've been with us now, over a year now, isn't it?
It is. It's about 14 months now. And we've done an awful lot in 14 months.
Time flies, as they say. Some of the areas that you've been involved in with us has been particularly around the integration of technology into the healthcare spectrum. And, you know, obviously the word health tech, med tech, these sort of peripherals, you know, they mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. But from your perspective, you know, how do you see technology, particularly things like machine learning and AI, may play a part, or it is playing a part, not may, it is playing a part in the acceleration and development within healthcare, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's such an evolving, rapidly area of technology, is the AI and the machine learning in particular. Mm-hmm. Really fascinates me. It's not something before I got involved with Neurocore, it's not something I've been heavily involved with. You know, a lot of my background is around web-based technologies, mobile phone applications, and the integrations thereof. Mm-hmm. But the space of big data and what you can do with that is just absolutely fascinating.
James, you've had quite a bit of involvement, or you've interviewed, I know, quite a few companies that are, you know, sort of in the very early stages of using, you know, algorithmic type and logical tech for things. I think like skincare was one of them, and a couple of others. You know, can you give any insight there?
Yeah, a lot, in fact, of companies are doing this. And yeah, I think the thing that's changed relatively recently has been, this is actually being used now. There was a shift a while ago, sort of within the last 6 months, there was a shift, in fact, it might even be close to 12 months ago now, a shift into prospective studies being done rather than retrospective. So instead of, you know, looking at old data sets and applying algorithms to old data sets, it was a shift to actually doing things prospectively, looking forward, so actually using algorithms in the real world and seeing how they did in a very safe way with actual patients. And I think that has led to an interesting increase in confidence. And I think it is a slow burn to build trust and build confidence in a technology like AI for lots of different things. I mean, we all know the radiology examples and that being talked about a fair amount. But it is building that trust now. It is being used out there, triaging people in the community, both in the UK and, in fact, around the world. It is diagnosing people. It is suggesting treatments. It's doing lots of different things. And it is a genuinely exciting time. It's funny, people ask me all the time, you know, what's the big trend in health tech? What's the next big technology? Mm-hmm. And I keep saying AI because it's exciting for a different reason. I think the potential of it is so enormous that we're only just scratching the surface right now of it being used. Until now, we've seen a lot and heard a lot about the potential, but we're starting to see that potential now. And I think, you know, I wrote actually in an article quite recently that I think it's probably big enough that we will talk at some point soon about the days before AI in healthcare and the days now after AI in healthcare. I think it will be that monumental in terms of efficiency, processing, everything that's going to happen quicker. And you'd hope a lot more efficiently and a lot higher quality, therefore, for patients.
I mean, that's already the case, isn't it, with things like streaming platforms, you know, Spotify, Netflix, you know, Amazon, a range of those. I mean, you know, the time before that was you searched for under category, you know, whoever, you know, suggestions were raw at best. And now it's almost, you don't do it any other way. I mean, unless you're specifically looking for something, you just, the suggestions are so spot on, excuse the pun, that you almost don't bother.
It's funny. It's almost like the internet. Mm. You know, I don't know if you've seen that video clip. I think it was Bowie that was saying, I don't think we've even seen, and this is from many years ago, but it's like he said, I don't even think we've seen the power of what this will do to society and the way we communicate and the way everything happens. And it felt like this kind of monumental shift even back then. It feels to me like that way with AI. I think there will just be this sort of real stepwise change with everything that it can do across all aspects of healthcare.
Simon, on those streaming platforms, as an example, I mean, we ourselves even often use the term recommendation engine. From a technical perspective, or to describe that for those that maybe don't understand exactly how it applies to, you know, whether it's streaming platforms or whether it's, medical treatments, how does a recommendation work in its most basic form?
At its most basic form, it can be something as really, really, really simple. So the very early versions of Spotify, they very much were, you know, simple demographics. So we put everyone into a small box based on, you know, age, sex, and various other bits and pieces. And we can then say, you know, effectively, once you've watched something, you know, it becomes stronger if you can have the feedback loop and say, mm-hmm. did you enjoy this? But yeah. Ultimately, you know, from the fact that you watched all of a particular series, we can assume from that you liked it, and you can kind of then correlate from the fact that you've watched all of a particular series. If we've qualified that series as being of a specific genre, so whether it be a comedy or whatever type of TV show it is that you've just watched, we can then assume that people like you might like that kind of genre. Mm-hmm. We can then kind of, you know, if you watch lots and lots of other series of the same genre, we can then build up quite a strong picture of what it is that Rick likes watching on television. And if we can do that for you, and we do that for lots of other people, we mm-hmm. can then kind of do the very simplistic view of people who are like you. So, you know, if we can find multiple people that like the same kinds of different genres, we can then say, actually, well, this person has watched these 10 things that you haven't yet found. And then from that, we can then recommend those things to you.
And that is exactly what it looks like in healthcare primarily, isn't it? It's a data or a demographic or a disease or a condition or, you know, some type of data set, and what the expected clinical outcome or reported clinical outcome starts to build these same recommendations based off of that data. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit more complicated than that, to be honest. But I think there's probably a lot more to it. But you would have to ask the technical experts, I think. But you're right in some sense. Like, look, there's it's going to be data sets, it's going to be labeling data, and it's going to be, you know, correlating one to the other and coming up with an algorithm. I think yes, to a point. But then, you know, I've been listening to a lot of Elon Musk recently and him talking about neural nets and like all this sort of stuff, which just goes way beyond my competence. I don't know about you, Simon, but that's where it gets really interesting.
That's where it gets really, really, really interesting. And it gets to the realms of, I don't quite understand how it's made that decision, but you can kind of see why it's made that decision. So yes, as part of my degree, which seems like an eternal time ago, I actually wrote an application that was a learning neural network, and you could just give it a whole bunch of inputs and outputs, and you could sit there and go, yeah, okay, it goes off and it learns those things. And then from that, you can then start putting in other datas and go, okay, I don't quite understand how you've got to that answer of X, Y, and Z, but actually I can, you know, logically I could have inferred the same thing. So absolutely, I still don't understand quite just how that neural network works, but the maths is just mind-bogglingly complicated.
Even I was watching an interview with Elon Musk talking about the Tesla car, and the interviewer said, you know, how many lines of code must there be, for a Tesla car to stay on the road and not crash into everything. And Elon Musk was almost like quite offended. He was like, the thing is, you don't understand, like actually loads of lines of code is not that good when you consider like neural nets and all this other stuff. So he's like, actually, that wouldn't be very efficient if I told you loads of lines of code, but it might be around, I don't know, 1,000, something like that. So yeah, interesting.
What do you think the next area? I mean, it's a little bit off our main topic, but what do you think is the next stages for things like AI recommendation engines, you know, machine learning for, you know, not necessarily healthcare, but, you know, technology in general? What do you think is going to sort of, you know, come to the fore in the next few years?
For me, the biggest thing that's going to happen in the next couple of years is just around the commoditization of it.
Yeah.
If you go back a couple of years trying to do anything with anything even remotely complicated, you really needed PhD scientists. You needed huge amounts of compute power to try and work out anything meaningful to try and get some answers out of anything. You know, with the whole move to cloud computers or AWS and Azure in particular in the last year, the level of algorithms and neural networks that you can get just simply out of the box. So you can fire up a virtual machine, you can press some buttons, you can give it some data sets, and you can ask it to go and learn some stuff. You can come back 2 days later and you can then start asking it questions, and it is incredibly good just purely and simply out of the box. Yeah. And I think, you know, over the next couple of years, that is just going to get simpler and simpler to use. And that means, you know, coming back to where we started, more and more organizations are really going to be able to start using the power of that to make things more personal, more individual.
I think then too, it starts to become the data assets of, you know, those companies or those developments. So, you know, I'm sure that, for instance, you know, Netflix or Spotify or any of the current healthcare companies that are collecting this data, that's becoming a commodity in and with it itself.
Yes, and I actually think that's the bit that's got to change. To go back to Simon's last point, I do agree with that commoditization element. And I think that really will lead to the fast proliferation of more solutions, because you go from needing to be an expert in the solution to only really needing to be an expert in the problem. Because like anyone can build an app now, or they can go to an agency and just get an app built. If it becomes that easy to execute on AI or machine learning or anything in and around and stuff like that, like that's where experts in the problem can then just get a solution made. And I think that, as I say, fast proliferation to many, many, many solutions hitting the market then. But to your point around data and the commoditization of the data itself, that for me is the bit that has to change, because for those companies, in a very centralized way, collecting all of that data and being able to own it, for me, just doesn't feel right, especially in healthcare where it's patients. I feel that we have to go to a point where patients are in control and own their own data and either gift it or sell it to those companies that are collecting it. I have to believe I believe that is the right thing to do, and I have to believe that that is where we'll get to. I know that the likes of Tim Berners-Lee are working on, you know, Internet 2.0 and his solid platform and decentralizing things. You know, there's lots going on in this space. I don't think it will be long before it does happen. I wouldn't like to put a timeline on it, but I think that has to be the next phase, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. Totally agree with you, James. And actually, as you were saying that, I was in the back of my mind, I was thinking Tim Berners-Lee and Solid. So it's interesting that you've jumped to the same conclusion as me, because I think the ability to own your own data, manage your own data, and delete your own data and choose who you share it with, I think is absolutely going to become fundamental in the next 5 years.
It's interesting the markets that will create as well, because with the ability for individuals to then decide who gets their data, how they get rewarded for that, there'll be interesting models that appear. And it also kind of flattens the hierarchy in terms of big companies building something that collects your data to just an individual entrepreneur. You know, if it's a decent deal for your data, those smaller players will be able to just go and do it and you know, galvanize a group of people to get their data, do something useful with it. And it's a fair exchange of value. I think it flattens or levels the playing field a bit more as well. I think there's loads of really interesting things that will happen off the back of that.
So Simon, you know, off the talk of, you know, things like data, et cetera, obviously part of what Neuracore is doing is looking at how the future of technology is going to fit, particularly into bioelectronics and electroceuticals. You know, the positive thing for us is that essentially we are a software company. You know, we program firmware into devices as therapeutics. We've done some early stage data set testing, and it's all looking very, very positive. Obviously, we've got a huge amount of work in front of us, but I'm happy for you to give some sort of indication as to how you know how that might fit with individual users and treatments from a bioelectronics perspective.
Yeah, I think the personalization element, I think, is clear that that's going to be how we make the biggest step change from our current devices. You know, the current devices are fantastic. They're really good, providing you know which program that you want to do for a specific type of ailment within your body. Mm-hmm. Where I think we're going in terms of the personalization is, obviously it's under NDA, we can't talk too much about it, but the ability to have that device being far, far more intelligent and start understanding that the programs you've had in the past, what those programs did for you, whether they were successful for you, and therefore have the device actually start to preemptively tell you what it wants to do. I think that's going to be the big sort of step change for us this year.
Yeah, and I think, James, in general, a lot of medicine, even pharmaceuticals, when they start talking about precision medicine, are also, you know, facing in that same direction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about personalization at the minute. I mean, we've even been in some conversations that is personalization going too far? Is personalization or scalable? But I think when it comes to software, it kind of is. And I think that's the whole point, because when it's algorithms that are continuously learning, of course it's scalable. Mm-hmm. I think where it gets difficult is, you know, in pharmaceuticals, where it's chemicals and it's changing the amounts and things like that. And mm-hmm. I'm a thin ice because I don't know too much about it, but don't upset any pharma companies on here. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, personalization is absolutely enormous. And it's almost what people expect at the moment. A sort of a one size fits all doesn't really appeal to people anymore, you know, and like what you guys experience, right? People just won't accept, oh, just take this ibuprofen, take this morphine, take this Oramorph, take this, you know, fentanyl. Like people just aren't like, oh yeah, we'll just take the generic dose of this and see what happens. Like nobody wants that anymore. People want different things now. They want something that's personal to them. And it's one of the reasons that they'll go to, you know, more natural remedies, things that actually mimic things that are already going on in their body, things like that, rather than the external stuff. And I imagine that's a lot of the feedback that you get.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the you know, even if you start looking at things like blood glucose or blood sugar levels for live or real time blood sugar monitoring for diabetics, you know, 2-3 years ago, that just was non-existent. And now it's become, you know, it's become precision based. You know, people are not using insulin without need. You know, if they're live monitoring, they're understanding their eating choices, you know, and other aspects that are affecting those blood glucose levels. And, you know, that's where precision, you know, medicine is going, is understanding what those interventions are. And I think it's more to your point, and you know what Simon said is, I think that is going to be the expectation, particularly for interventional medical devices. You know, even things, I saw an article that was shared by one of my team members the other day around orthopedic inserts that have got sensors. You know, so understanding issues before they occur, range of motion, improve, you know, measurements, all of these sorts of things from internally within the device, this is where it's going.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of your device, obviously patent pending, you can't say too much, but in terms of your device and I guess the personalization elements of what that will be delivering, what is that?
So, I mean, if you think of it in its most basic terms, going back to the original comments and discussion with Simon, you know, around even things, if you're looking at Spotify or Netflix, you know, based on what you used and based on, you know, how you rated that program, whether it's a bioelectronic program or whether, you know, it was a series, we'll have influence and we'll be able to influence, you know, what types of parameters particularly fit or suit that individual's use. And, you know, this is, you know, in its, you know, most basic form, where I think not just ours, but most interventional medical device technology is going to head, you know, even things in the future, I think things like pacemakers, cochlear implants, or any other types of bioelectronics are going to start to personalize based on in you know, the individual's needs and outcomes. And more to the point about the scaling part is, if you can apply that technology into the individuals, it's not so much the individual need, it's about the cohort need of the individuals. And I think, you know, this is going to be a complete paradigm shift and step change for healthcare in general.
I suppose when it comes to bioelectronics as well, it means that going forward, you're increasingly more likely to get it right first time and get it optimal first time. So it's more likely to be more effective more first times around, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I mean, like Simon said, I mean, our devices and our current tech is great, but it's the first step. You know, we've just happened to get that spectrum very close to the mark for many, but we can do much better. You know, instead of having to, you know, go through the various modes trying to find what's actually working, you know, after a number of uses, you'll know, and so will your device know what it is that you need. And, you know, again, that applies across, I think, many areas of healthcare or the direction that it's taking. And, you know, why there's such a high demand for data scientists, data analysts, and, you know, all the Internet of Things that are applying, you know, in the healthcare and medical space, unless Simon disagrees with me.
No, Rick, I would never disagree with you.
Look, both, it's been an interesting chat. It's a slightly different topic to, you know, what our audience is used to, but, you know, it's these peripheral areas that play such a pivotal part in, you know, what is healthcare, what is going to be human health and interventional therapeutics going forward. And, you know, I think if you don't pay attention, that you're going to miss it completely. So thanks, Simon. It's been great chatting. Thanks, James. Great as usual.
Cheers, Rick.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks, James.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Bioelectronics Podcast by NeuroCore and for making it to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, remember to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. We'd much appreciate it. And you can head to the description of this episode to follow us on all of our socials so you don't miss out on any of the latest bioelectronic content.